You couldn't have met in a better place. You were made free of it long ago, you know, and the other two ain't strangers. What you got to sell? What do you got to sell? Half a minute's patience, Joe, you'll see. What odds, Ben? What odds, Mrs. Dilber? Every person has a right to take care of themselves. He always did. Who's the worse for the loss of a few things like these? Not a dead man, I suppose.
Mrs. Dilber, whose manner was remarkable for general propitiation,
said no indeed, ma'am. If he wanted to keep him after he was dead, a wicked old screw, why wasn't he natural in his lifetime? If he had been, he'd have had somebody to look after him when he was struck with death instead of lying gasping out his last there alone by himself. It's the truest word that ever was spoke. It's a judgment on him. I wish it was a little heavier judgment. And it should have been, you may depend on it, if I could have laid my hands on anything else. Open that bundle, old Joe, and let me know the value of it. Speak out plain. I'm not afraid to be the first, nor afraid to let him see it.
Joe went down on his knees for the greater convenience of opening the bundle and dragged out a large and heavy roll of some dark stuff.
What do you call this? Bed curtains? Aye, bed curtains. Don't drop the aisle upon the blankets now. His blankets? Whose else do you think? He isn't likely to take cold without them, I dare say. Now, you may look through that shirt till your eyes ache. You won't find a hole in it, nor a threadbare place. It's the best he had, and a fine one, too. They'd have wasted it by dressing him up in it, if it hadn't been for me.
Scrooge listened to this dialogue in horror. Hear it. See, the case of this unhappy man might be my own. My life tends that way now. What's this? Scene had changed, and now he almost touched a bare, uncurtained bed, a pale light rising in the outer air, fell straight upon this bed, and on it, unwatched, unwept, uncared for, was the body of this plundered, unknown man. If we see some tenderness connected with the death, or this dark chamber, spirit will be forever present to me. The ghost conducted him to Bob Cratchit's house, the dwelling he had visited before, and found the mother and the child seated about the fire. They were quiet, very quiet. The noisy little Cratchits were as still as statues in one corner, and sat looking up at Peter, who had a book before him. The mother and her daughters were engaged in needlework, but they were very quiet. The mother laid her work upon the table and put her hand up to her face. Color hurts my eyes, she said. They're better now again. Makes them weak by candlelight. And I wouldn't show weak eyes to your father when he comes home for the world. Must be near his time.
Past it, rather,
Peter answered, shutting up his book. But I think he's walked a little slower than he used these last few evenings, Mother. I've known him walk with Tiny Tim upon his shoulder. Very fast. There's your father at the door. She hurried out to meet him, and little Bob, in his comfort, very in need of it, poor fellow, came in. His tea was ready for him in the hob, and they all tried who should help him to it most. Bob was very cheerful with him and spoke pleasantly to all the family. He looked at the work on the table and praised the industry and speed of Mrs. Cratchit and the girls. They'd be done long before Sunday, he said. Sunday. You went today then, Bob. Yes, my dear. I wish you could have gone. It would have done you good to see how green a place it is. But you'll see it often. I promised him that I would walk there on Sunday. Something tells me that our parting is at hand. I know it, but I know not how. Tell me what man that was with the covered face whom we saw lying dead. Ghost of Christmas yet to come conveyed him to a dismal, wretched, ruinous churchyard. The spirit stood among the graves and pointed down to one. Scrooge crept towards it, trembling as he went, and following the finger, Red upon the stone of the neglected grave, Ebenezer Scrooge. Holding up his hands in one last prayer to have his fate reversed, he saw an alteration in the phantom's hood and dress. It shrunk, collapsed, and dwindled down into a bedpost. And the bedpost was his own. And the bed was his own. And the room was his own. And best of happiest and happiest of all, the time before him was his own to make amends in. He was checked in his transport by the churches ringing out the lustiest peals he had ever heard. Running to the window, he opened it and put out his head. No fog, no mist, no night. Clear, bright, stirring, golden day. "What's today?" cried Scrooge, calling downward to a boy in his Sunday clothes, who perhaps had loitered in to look about him. "Eh? What's today, my fine fellow?"
"Today? Why, Christmas Day."
"It's Christmas Day and I haven't missed it. Hello, my fine fellow. Hello. Do you know the poulterers in the street but one at the corner?"
"I should hope I did."
"An intelligent boy. A remarkable boy. Do you know whether they've sold the prize turkey that was hanging up there? Not the little prize turkey, the big one."
"What, the one as big as me?"
"What a delightful boy. It's a pleasure to talk to him."
"Yes, my buck. It's hanging there now."
"Is it? Go and buy it."
"Walker."
"No, no, I'm in earnest. Go and buy it and tell them to bring it here. And I'll give them the direction where to take it. Come back with the man and I'll give you a shilling. Come back with him in less than 5 minutes and I'll give you half a crown."
The boy was off like a shot.
"I'll send it to Bob Cratchit. He shan't know who sends it. It's twice the size of Tiny Tim. Joe Miller never made such a joke as sending it to Bob's will be."
The hand in which he wrote the address was not a steady one. But write it he did, somehow, and went downstairs to open the street door, ready for the coming of the poulterer's man. It was a turkey. He never could have stood upon his legs, that bird. He would have snapped him short off in a minute like sticks of ceiling wax. Scrooge dressed him all in his best and at last got out into the street. The people were by this time pouring forth as he had seen them with the ghost of Christmas present, and walking with his hands behind him, Scrooge regarded every one of them with a delighted smile. He looked so irresistibly pleasant, in a word, that three or four good-humored fellows said, "Good morning, sir, and Merry Christmas to you." And Scrooge said afterwards that of all the blithe sounds he'd ever heard, those were the blithest in his ears. In the afternoon, he turned his steps towards his nephew's house. He passed the door a dozen times before he had the courage to go up and knock. But he made a dash, and he did it. "Your master at home, my dear," said Scrooge to the girl. "Nice girl. Very." "Yes, sir. Where is he, my love?" "He's in the dining room, sir, along with the mistress." "He knows me," said Scrooge with his hand already on the dining room lock. "I'll go in here, my dear." "Fred, it's I, your Uncle Scrooge, have come to dinner. Will you let me in, Fred?" Oh, but he was early at the office next morning. Oh, he was early. If he could only be there first and catch Bob Cratchit coming late, that was the thing he set his heart upon. And he did it. The clock struck 9, no Bob. 9:15, no Bob. Bob was full 18 minutes and a half past his time. Scrooge sat with his door wide open that he might see him come into the cabin. Bob's hat was off before he opened the door, his comforter too. He was on his stool in a jiffy, driving away with his pen as if he were trying to overtake 9 o'clock. "Hello," called Scrooge. "What do you mean by coming here at this time of day?"
"Very sorry, sir. I am behind my time."
"You are. I think you are. Step this way, if you please."
"It's only once a year, sir. It shall not be repeated. I was making rather merry yesterday, sir."
"Now, I'll tell you what, my friend. I'm not going to stand this sort of thing any longer. And therefore..." Scrooge continued, leaping from his stool and giving Bob such a dig in the waistcoat that he staggered back into the tank again. And therefore, I'm about to raise your salary. Bob trembled and got a little nearer to the ruler. Merry Christmas, Bob, said Scrooge with an earnestness that could not be mistaken. Merrier Christmas, Bob, my good fellow, than I've given you in many a year. I'll raise your salary and I'll try to help your family, and we'll discuss your affairs this afternoon over a Christmas bowl of smoking bishop, Bob. Make up the fires and buy a second coal scuttle before you dot another I, Bob Cratchit. Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He had no further intercourse with spirits, but lived in that respect upon the total abstinence principle ever afterwards. And it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well, if any man alive possessed that knowledge. May that be truly said of us, and all of us. And so is Tiny Tim up there. God bless you. Thank you.
A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens is recorded by Paul Landis, professor of English at the University of Illinois, one of the many fine traditions of the Christmas season. This has been a special feature of the University of Illinois Radio Service.